Greetings all and welcome to another episode of TechNet Radio. My name is Dan Stoltz and I will be your host today. You can reach me on my blog at itproguru.com or email me at itproguru@microsoft.com. Today we're continuing our Data in the Cloud multi-part series as we talk about built-in DBA-like features within Windows Azure. And my guest today is Savano Coriani. I want to remind everybody to stick around to the end of the show for some tips and tricks. So welcome, Savano. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, Dan. Yes, my name is Savano Coriani. I'm part of the Azure Customer Advisory Team. And in my role, I'm working closely with customers and partners, engaging in their projects and making sure that they are using our Azure services in the right way, but also making sure that we can collect a great amount of learnings and feedback to basically report back to the Azure development teams in order to make our platform stronger and stronger. And I've been working with the Azure SQL Database team since a couple of years ago, actually, in some of the biggest deployments of this service, actually.
Oh, and you know what? I have your phone number, and I'm going to leverage that. So let's go ahead and dive right in. Can you explain the new service tier model for both performance capacity and the new capabilities along those lines?
Sure. I need to do a little bit of background first. When we started to introduce the Azure SQL DB service itself, we had this model with web and business editions, where actually we were positioning, the database service itself around the database size, the amount of storage that each database was actually using, and we were also charging customers with this model. So essentially, from a technology technology perspective, the environment sharing all these customer database instances were providing, a good trade-off in terms of cost and performance. But what some of the customers that started to adopt this initial model, what they reported was that they were experiencing a lot of variance in terms of performance and throughput, database throughput over time. And this was due to the fact that, all these customer databases that were sharing the same physical hardware behind the scene were not, bounded in terms of the amount of, resources that they were able to consume in any given amount of time. So we had some very happy customers that were running on, very quiet backend nodes that always, very, very happy about the service. They were running, and they were actually able to use a lot of hardware resources, physical resources available on those nodes. But at the same time, we also had a number of customers that were complaining about this variability because they were sitting on kind of hot, backend nodes with noisy neighbors, what we used to call them, and that were competing for the same set of hardware resources. Their experience on mission critical applications running on depending on the Azure SQL DB service were complaining a little bit more, let's say. So we decided to introduce a new model that is instead of being focused on the database size is actually focused on the the overall database throughput and capacity that each and every service tier can provide. So the idea is that we now have a governed environment where each of these database instances is basically running inside one of these boxes, bounding boxes, where these boundaries are defined by the amount of resources, the typical set of resources that a database needs in order to run. So CPU capacity, memory capacity, I/O capacity, for example, for reads and for write operations. So we each and every service tier and performance level is actually assigned of a particular box that depending on, again, the size and, of course, the cost of running that particular amount of resources, that database will receive. And with this model, it's impossible that a single database that is receiving a number of, you know, query application queries and requests will actually go ahead and consume, you know, resources that are actually deployed to other instances, database instances sitting on the same node. So the idea is, you know, the idea is to have a much more predictable performance experience for database workloads running on this new service set of service tiers and capacity model that we have available. And we still have, you know, some limits in terms of storage capacity, so pure disk size. But in reality, these are kind of upper limits that we need to we need to set anyway, because we cannot provide infinite storage size. But in terms of what a customer is actually buying when he deploys a new Azure SQL DB instance is a given amount of processing power and hardware resources in order to be able to run a given amount of database throughput. So this performance this model is in some ways changing also the way DBAs and developers need to think about their application and the amount of resources that are actually needed in order to run that particular application. And there's a lot of guidance that we published on the MSDN docs that is actually helping customers to understand exactly what is the level of performance that they require in order to run that workload. And we also created a kind of a synthetic benchmark called the Azure SQL DB benchmark that is publicly available and described on the MSDN documents, that is providing an idea of what kind of expectations we need to have when we are using a certain amount of a certain performance level inside a service tier in Azure SQL DB. And in addition to the performance experience itself, we also decided to put a set of features and characteristics that are unique for each of these service tiers in terms of, for example, manageability or high availability. So we will see that these different tiers will provide, for example, different backup, retention times, will provide a different high availability and GDPR and geo, disaster recovery, features and capabilities, depending on the service tiers. And of course, the more we add this performance, capabilities and, the feature, the more, of course, the cost of running our database instances will increase.
Yeah, you talked a moment ago about that noisy neighbor. I think whenever I first moved my blog up to Azure, I was the noisy neighbor. Because my blog, whenever I first moved it to Azure, it was screaming. And I do have a pretty popular website. But the good news is now with these new, this new service tier, I can still have that screaming site if I want to. I just, I put it in the tier that's going to give me the performance that I want, that I need. So I think that is all awesome stuff. Let's change gears a little bit. And you talked a little bit about, other capabilities, monitoring, capacity planning, stuff like that. Can you go into a little more detail on their real-time capabilities and what's new and how that helps, whether it be in understanding where I should be and what model I should be on, what tier I should be on, stuff like that?
Yeah, and this is very connected with our previous topic, because at the end of the day, we need to understand, especially when we are moving from an existing web and business edition, like what you had initially on for your blogs into this new model, we need to understand a little bit, okay, where is my workload in terms of capacity requirements and resource requirements, so that I can pick up the right level of performance in the new model, and I can grow my workload safely in the future by just, for example, adding some more resources and moving and scaling up to the next resource tier whenever is needed. So. So we started to introduce a number of essentially a number of monitoring capabilities that customers can use, starting from the existing web and business editions. So today we have in the master database for each logical server in Azure SQL DB, we have a new view that is called sys.resourcestats, resource_stats, that is providing for all the databases that belongs to that particular virtual server, a set of statistics in terms of resource consumption. Specifically, we are providing every 15 minutes an indication of how many CPU, I/O, memory, active requests are actually hitting that particular database in that 15 minutes interval. And we can actually compare those metrics that are coming from that SIS resource stats view. We can use those metrics in order to understand what will be the performance experience when we will move into the new service tiers. I'll give you an example. If, for example, for my web or business database instance today, I see that the average CPU consumption over time is, 80%, because there's a percentage value for each of these consumption. 80% means that when I will be moving my database to, for example, the new service tiers, that database will be using 80% of the capacity of a standard 2 performance level in the new service tiers. So all the percentages that we see in the resource stats view for web and business databases are compared to a S2 instance in the new service tier model. So for example, if we see that our database has some peaks, like, 200% or 300%, this means that we will need an instance in the new service tier model that is 2 or 3 times bigger than S2. So based on that indicator, we will have a first rough indication of the kind of performance tier we will need in the new model. So this is true for existing databases, and we also have a number of indicators for databases after they've been moved to the new service tiers. And we have also a more granular view on the performance experience in this new service tier model. In fact, we do have a per database view that is called sys.dm_db_resource_stats. And this is giving us the 15 seconds experience in terms of resource consumption for that particular database instance. So this will give us the ability to monitor in a much more granular way how much, how many resources our database workload is actually consuming, and will give us the ability to, for example, be alerted if we need to scale up for whatever reason and move to a bigger service tier, or if we want to take a more radical approach and start introducing scale out by leveraging, for example, the new Elasticscale APIs that we announced, some time ago. So essentially, that is a kind of a real-time indicator that DBAs and developers can use to understand, their resource utilization and to react to resource utilization by adopting some kind of, flexible and scalable, reactive action in order to accommodate a specific level of workload.
Great. So we talked a little bit about disaster continuity and disaster recovery. Geo restore services is an example. What about some of the other things like, you know, import and export services? Are they still relevant? What happens if I have to, you know, what happens if we do the unthinkable? We delete a database. You know, it's a different environment. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how that differs or if it differs.
Yeah, I mean, again, in addition to the performance experience that I was describing, I also mentioned this new capabilities, new features that the new service tiers are providing. The first one that I think it's really interesting is the new restore service. So essentially, what happens is that, you know, behind the scene, we are taking backups of the Azure SQL database instances that our customers are running every 5 minutes. So we do have, and we keep these backups for a given amount of time. So this means a number of things. First one is that if for whatever reason a customer is going and deleting a database, we still have, for a given amount of time, we still have all the backups that are necessary in order for him to restore the deleted database. And this is very easy. You can do that directly from the portal. You can go to your virtual server instance and see the list of all the deleted databases, and you can just right click and recover the database that you just mistakenly deleted. But this
On that topic, though, I'm guessing you're not encouraging people to use that for their backup strategy of their database?
No. No, that's okay. Even because the moment you are deleting the database, your applications are not able to connect to your database system, so you will produce downtime in that way. But leveraging the same infrastructure behind the scene, you can also now do a point-in-time restore of your database for a retention period that depends on the service tier and the performance level you're sitting on. What I'm saying is that basically you have the ability within a given time interval that is, for example, 15 days for, sorry, 7 days for basic, 15 days for standard, and 35 days for premium service tiers, you have the ability to go back in time and restore a copy of your database at that exact moment in time in its past. And you will be able, for example, to recover from the database that table that your developer, for example, again, erroneously deleted without drop table, whatever. So you will be able to recover data, or if you want to switch back to that exact state of your database instance, you have the ability to do that, because you are basically creating a new database as of that was at that particular moment in time. The interesting part here is that behind the scene we are also geo-replicating from a storage perspective, those backups to another data center. So you will be able, in case, for example, our primary data center for whatever reason will not be available, to go to a secondary data center and to execute the restore operation for that particular database and recover that database to a point that is basically depending on the latency that physically exists between the two data centers, but let's say a few minutes from the point where your primary data center was not available anymore. And this kind of geo-restore service is available in every service tier. So starting from the basic service tier, so a few bucks a month, you have this ability to actually restore your database in a different data center in case a disaster strikes on your primary DC. And this is really, really interesting. But moving up into the service tier offering, we are adding new capabilities. Like, for example, the standard tier is providing what we call passive geo-replication. So in this case, you can establish a replication session between your primary database and a secondary database that will be passive, so is not available from an application transaction perspective, but you can actually promote that copy to an active one in case, again, your primary is not available anymore in your primary data center. So this is essentially a kind of a reduced version compared to readable replicas or in always on for traditional SQL Server on premises or in Azure, but is also a lot cheaper. So you have the ability to establish this replication session between different data centers and actually keep your database in standby. And the moment your primary is not available anymore, you will be able to promote it to a primary. And you know, in the premium tier, premium service tier, we have this active geo-replication option where you can actually select up to four different replicas of your primary database into four different data centers and have these copies accessible for read-only workloads like reporting or whatever other application workload you think it makes sense to run on a read-only copy. And the interesting thing is that you can set up all these new replication topologies and have an highly available and disaster recovery solution all in a kind of a graphical fashion from the portal with few clicks. So these kind of activities that on premises would have taken at least weeks in terms of provisioning provisioning the environment, setting up the networking and testing and so on, you can have the same result here in seconds with just few clicks on the portal. And I think this is really, really great.
So all of this can be done from the portal. It's not, I don't need PowerShell, I don't need some third-party tool, I don't need System Center, it just...
You can do that, of course, through all the APIs that we have available, so through PowerShell and so on, but these graphical capabilities are also available through the portal. Yeah.
And that's the new portal, though, not the
That's the new portal, exactly.
Right. Okay, awesome. So there's been the improvements that have... go into Azure, I don't know, it seems to me, I may be dreaming, but it seems to me like every week or so, there's just some awesome new technology that's announced, or I just find it, right? I don't hear about the announcement, I just find it. So can you tell us about, maybe what are futures? What's coming? Is this growth rate expected to continue? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is really funny because So it took some time for to the Azure SQL DB team in order to put in place all the infrastructural components that are the basis for all these new improvements and new capabilities that are now coming, as you said, with an incredible kind of flow and frequency. The reason I find this funny is because in the past, it was kind of a perception in the community that we were not investing in Azure SQL DB anymore. So the reality was exactly the opposite, was that we were building the underlying infrastructure to be able to actually introduce all these new capabilities. And now we are up to a point where we can definitely start changing dramatically the experience of running our SQL workloads in Azure SQL DB. We just recently announced that SQL Pass a couple of weeks ago, the upcoming improvements for Azure SQL DB that are focused on, I would say, a number of pillars, a number of different areas. One is to be more compatible with traditional SQL Server applications in terms of features. Things like, for example, common language runtime components inside our databases. Things like the full spectrum of DMVs, dynamic management views available in terms of monitoring the database performance and database behaviors and so on. Things like more compatibility with the full T-SQL spectrum of commands and so on. So this is an area where we want, ultimately, basically, let customers to decide if they want to move to Azure SQL DB or to SQL Server running in VMs based on their own considerations and not, you know, potential blockers that we still have in Azure SQL DB. So we want to have, you know, to give the customer the full flexibility to select Azure SQL DB if they want to benefit from this, you know, automated experience and, you know, self-management experience, or to go to SQL Server running in VMs because they want the full control of the box and all the aspects, you know, behind the scene. We are also introducing new performance levels, you know, we can expect in the future to have full, again, a parity in terms of performance between Azure SQL DB and all the, you know, biggest and newest VM series that we are introducing in the Azure platform for, you know, SQL Server workloads. So again, performance will not be kind of a differentiator between SQL Server running in VMs or Azure SQL DB. And again, we are also expanding all the troubleshooting and monitoring capabilities. I think we already announced the fact that X-Event sessions will be available in Azure SQL DB as they are today in SQL Server running in VMs, basically to remove the need of the classic question that I'm receiving from customers: is SQL Profiler available in Azure SQL DB? No, for a number of reasons, will not be available in the future. But because even on premises, we are moving SQL Profiler into this new technology called X-Events that is much more granular, much more, you know, lightweight for troubleshooting and monitoring database instances, even in production. We are going to cover, you know, the X-Event technology in Azure SQL DB and provide to customers the entire, you know, set of capabilities that we have on-premises in terms of troubleshooting and monitoring performance, availability, and so on. So, yeah, there are a lot of great improvements coming. And in the next 3 to 6 months, I'm sure customers will be surprised by the amount of new, you know, things that will pop up in Azure SQL DB.
You know, and I think not only that, but also even the technologies that are out there now, be it ready for prime time or in preview, like I think of Redis Cache. You have technologies like that that really can augment your capabilities within SQL Server and SQL DB, because if you need to pull a query from, say, multiple tables, and they could be in multiple databases and multiple places in the world even, and then query that, queue that into a cache and have blazing performance out of that very, very, very costly, what would otherwise be a very, very costly transaction. It is really mind-blowing that the more you learn about this, the more you realize just how much power we have and are going to continue to have in our hands once we learn how to use it all.
Yeah, definitely. And again, Azure SQL DB is not an island. It's part of a bigger platform. It's part of an ecosystem that is actually providing a number of other services that are actually working together side by side with Azure SQL DB. You can pick up, you know, one service, I don't know, Azure Machine Learning or HD Insight. All of these are working, you know, natively with Azure SQL DB. So basically, the integration between Azure SQL DB and all the other services in the platform is getting better and better. And we are improving, you know, Azure SQL DB itself in order to enable things like, column store indexes will come to Azure SQL DB. Parallelism. So today, SQL Server queries running in Azure SQL DB are limited to a single thread, a single execution thread, so cannot leverage things like, you know, parallel index scanning and so on and so far. The new, you know, capabilities that will come in the next few months will enable, you know, parallelism, intra-query parallelism in Azure SQL DB. We can think about, I don't know, hackathon or in-memory, you know, OLTP tables will come, you know, soon to Azure SQL DB as well. So, yeah, basically the service itself is improving and improving, but also the ability for Azure SQL DB to be part of a solution. You mentioned Redis Cache. But you can think about all the new platform as a service components, things like Azure Data Factory, in order to do import pipeline to design, you know, data import pipeline or data movement pipelines that are targeting Azure SQL DB as a source or as a destination. And Stream Analytics is another interesting service where basically the results of your event processing, you know, real-time event processing and analytics in the cloud will be stored in Azure SQL DB in most of our customer, you know, solutions at the end of the day. So yeah, it's really exciting to see that, you know, the service itself is progressing, is, you know, increasing the number of solutions that are currently or will be able to leverage Azure SQL DB from a compatibility and performance standpoint, but also the way Azure SQL DB is integrating with the rest of the platform is really, really promising for solution developers and for DBAs.
Yeah, so one of the things that I want to highlight on as we kind of start wrapping this thing up is, you know, these are some really awesome capabilities, awesome tools, and capabilities within the platform in Azure SQL DB. But one thing that I'm not sure that we've really hammered home is what all this wonderful stuff gives you is a reduced deployment time. It gives you a reduced management time. It gives you higher visibility into your environment. And it's not learning this stuff. I'm a former DBA, so I kind of understand databases pretty well. I've also worked with infrastructure for quite a while, so maybe I'm skewed in what I've learned in a very short period of time. But it seems to me like the overall, what this is really doing is it's giving us all these extra capabilities at a lower cost point without a bunch of capital. And at the same time, it's reducing my IT and development at management time. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I, of course. You know, the ability to just go ahead and issue a create database command and have, you know, your database provisioned up and running in literally seconds is, you know, for folks that have been, you know, used to the traditional provisioning lifecycle of on-premises system and solution, this is, you know, literally unbelievable. The ability that and the flexibility that we have today in terms of picking up the right performance level, you know, the right set of features that are coming with our instance, and again, to have these features already deployed and configured for us, you know, we mentioned before, you know, high availability and disaster recovery, you know, these things would have taken, again, weeks and, you know, an incredible amount of efforts and skills in order to be able to do, you know, to do them properly. Now they are literally, you know, at the distance of a click on the new, you know, graphical portal. So yes, I'm not saying that this is completely magic and will maintain itself, and will have a, you know, kind of artificial intelligence to cover pretty much all the management tasks. This is of course not true, but it's definitely moving the DBA role and the system admin role to a different level. So what we see in real customer environments is that DBAs and sysadmins and also developers today are thinking more about, oh, how can I optimize my application more in order to make it more efficient, to make it more performing, you know, to reduce response times, to reduce operating costs, to reduce basically, can I run the same amount of workload and performance with a smaller performance level and a cheaper performance level? So what kind of optimizations do I need to execute on my existing application in order to make it more efficient? So this is more the kind of tasks and the area where developers and DBAs are focusing today in Azure SQL DB projects, more than I need to keep, you know, the lights on and my system up and running. So we know, you know, people in the past have spent, you know, the majority of their time, you know, maintaining the status quo, basically maintaining the systems up and running, because they basically didn't have time to concentrate on this more high level and more strategic set of tasks. right now, you know, the collaboration between these different roles, you know, developers, DBAs, and sysadmins, and the business side is exactly, you know, the kind of strategic improvement that services like Azure SQL DB can provide. And again, the platform itself is providing all the tools, all the transparency. We mentioned briefly, you know, the monitoring, DMVs and APIs. All these metrics are kind of reflected into the portal, so it's even easier for a small organization, a small company. You know, they don't even need to think about a complete monitoring solution. They have the portal. The new portal is fantastic because it's giving us again the full visibility that we need on our end-to-end solution, including Azure SQL DB. So again, I think more than just reducing the management efforts and, you know, the provisioning and deployment effort is literally moving these roles to a different level in terms of how they can contribute to an organization's success at the end.
Absolutely agree. And, you know, I love the way that you put that from a strategic thinking standpoint. And I fundamentally believe that as we start moving into cloud services, we do have to think differently. You know, I think back, I've been in the industry forever. You probably have too. And I think back to, you know, pre-95, you know, before the internet even really took off, and there was a way of thinking. And then the internet came along and you had to change your way of thinking. And I think as we really, as cloud services have matured so much, that's requiring another shift. And by being able to think strategically about how we can leverage these awesome new technologies that are available, it's really going to help us and our businesses achieve more, do more with less. And, you know, all these people that tell me, oh, I don't have the budget or I don't have the time. I am so sick of hearing I don't have the time to learn new technologies. Come on, are we in the IT industry or not? Because it's those people that don't take a little bit of time to think strategically about the business problems or the business goals and the business objectives, and being the technology experts for the organization, you know, giving us the, you know, we have to take that responsibility on. We have to take the responsibility on of recognizing that we're the ones that have that capability of being able to leverage these technologies and think strategically. On that same note, if somebody does get it and they want to start thinking strategically and they want to think about, you know, how can I, you know, leverage cloud services to improve business? Well, they don't have to go very far. You know, we talked about some pretty awesome technologies. First and foremost, learn the technologies and start using them and start saving money. And, you know, not only on, you know, on hardware that you have to replace, but also on increasing your performance of your, you know, existing systems or your migrating systems or any new workloads and stuff that are going into Windows Azure, leveraging these technologies. But begs the question of how do they get smarter? How does one become somebody like you or somebody like me that's using this stuff on a regular basis? And I do have some tips on that. First, I know you've done a lot of stuff, and we've talked about a lot of resources already during this presentation and others, and we're going to put those in the blog post accompanying this. But there's also a Microsoft Virtual Academy, which people can go to aka.ms/clouddatamva. That's a free online university all about Microsoft technologies. So they can learn about SQL, they can learn about Azure, they can learn about cloud services, they can learn about Windows, and they can learn about the migration from on-prem to Azure and tons of other things, whether it be coding and systems management and monitoring and all the great things that we've talked about and a whole lot more. If it's a Microsoft technology, it's on the Microsoft Virtual Academy. But also, you know, I'd mentioned at the beginning that we have some tips, and one of the ones that I wanted to share is one of the things that this great technology gives us the capability of doing is as technologists, as professionals in the technology industry, and with all this new knowledge that we have, what I'm seeing is a lot of people are out there actually creating their own businesses and, you know, branching out, you know, and not staying the 9-to-5 or 9-to-8 sometimes. I know, I get that too. But actually doing other things and building their own businesses around cloud infrastructure or cloud services or developing new solutions, not only for their own business, their own companies, but also for other companies. And I put a special program together for those that are interested in starting their own business. If they're developing applications or developing web services, developing product for Internet of Things or whatever. And if they go to aka.ms/clouddatafree, they can fill an application. They do need a URL. They need a website that explains what their business is. Yes, it can be a startup. There's some other conditions, and those are outlined on the website. But if they're approved for that, if they do meet the qualifications for that, $150 a month of Azure every month for 3 years. That is so incredible. You can do so much stuff with $150 worth of Azure. You literally can build your business on Windows Azure free services. The program also includes a bunch of software and some other features as well. And for those that do want to do that, there's also a website, buildyourbiz.org, where there's a lot of step-by-step instructions out there on how to build different things like, standing up a SQL Server, deploying SQL Server to Azure, deploying web services on SQL DB, etc. But also, there's, the Azure documentation is absolutely awesome. I got to say, it's probably the best documentation for a Microsoft product I've ever seen at this stage in its life cycle. So some really awesome stuff out there. Along all of this same lines, I really want to encourage our entire audience, everybody that hears any part of this video series, to get smart on today's topic. Get smart on the series topic of, Azure SQL DB, and all of the great things that are coming. The longer it takes people to get started, the further and further and further behind they're going to fall. So get started today. Do it for your career. We've got other sessions that are coming up in this multi-part series. In case you missed the ones that are out there, you can go to itproguru.com/clouddata. And I'll have live links to a lot of the stuff that we talked about today in the accompanying blog post for this video. So, Savanel, thank you for joining us. Do you have any final notes that you want to throw in there as we close or as we wrap up?
No, definitely to kind of support what you just said. Go and look, for example, at free resources like Channel 9. There's a tons of event recordings there. Look at the TechEd material, the Build conference material. And as Dan was saying, just familiarize with these services, with these technologies, because this is just the future for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Savannah.
Thanks, Dan, and thanks to all for your time.